It's time for Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell and Collins. If you have a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now at 252-222-4848.
And let's just do that. On the phone with us is Cecil Harvell, and in the studio, Wes Collins. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How are you, Michael?
Very good. I'm very good, Cecil. Thank you. And, you know, last week's conversation, we were talking about injunctions, and we're going to continue, I understand, the conversation today as it relates to domestic violence protection orders.
Let's begin with a little introduction. I think most of our listeners know that when we file a lawsuit, first of all, usually if after there's been some discussion whether or not the matter can be settled or resolved. But there are many matters that unfortunately cannot be resolved or compromised, and so a lawsuit is filed. Now, in the state of North Carolina and in most states, Mike, there are types of damages. And the type of damage that most of our listeners are most familiar with, of course, is money damages. There are even types of money damages. There's the compensatory, there's also the compensatory, and then there's sometimes our punitive damages. But these are money damages where a jury and or a judge determine that that there should be damages awarded in the money form. There are times in our life when a lawsuit and the prayer for money damages is not sufficient. The facts just simply do not fit an award of money damages. And sometimes what the type of damage that the or relief that the party needs is known as injunctive relief. It is a type of prayer for judgment that there be a stop order or injunctive relief.
Mm-hmm.
This might be where there's cases and factual scenarios where there's irreparable harm. You know, you can't cut down a 300 or 400 year oak tree and expect to put it back.
Right.
You can't, you know, do something environmentally and expect to be able to cure it later on. There are many examples of where money damages just do not fully award the party who's pursuing the action. The money damage is not going to fit the bill. And so the law does in fact have section 65, chapter 65, isn't it, Wes?
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Chapter 65 of the North Carolina General Statutes that sets forth all of the guidelines for we lawyers as to a lawsuit that is asking for injunctive relief. And so, yes, last week we talked about that. Let's talk about it some more this week. But that's kind of a background of how injunctive relief might evolve in a lawsuit.
Well, Wes is sitting here with a stack of papers in
yes.
front of him, and I know this term, and listeners probably will, it'll sound familiar, a DVPO, or Domestic Violence Protection Order. You get real personal when you start talking about this type of law and how it helps individuals. So maybe, Wes, flesh out or begin the discussion on Domestic Violence Protection Orders.
Right. This is a type of injunctive relief. And as we talked about last week, we generally went over Rule 65, which deals with temporary restraining orders and then preliminary injunctions and injunctive relief in a very broad context in, you know, your typical lawsuit. A more narrow type of injunctive relief falls under Chapter 50B of the North Carolina General Statutes. And that is the domestic violence statute. And we refer to these quite often as DVPOs, domestic violence protective orders. And as the name would indicate, this is for a very specific situation, domestic violence. 50B is really the statute that deals with family or relationship type of domestic violence. And 50C that we can talk about, that probably a good idea to maybe move over to that next week, is the statute that deals with non-family, like stalking type situations. Mm-hmm. So we can deal with that. But under 50B, the Domestic Violence Protective Order statute, very broadly stated, typically how that works is that there is an event of domestic violence, and I'll go through what that is in a moment, and it's often then presented to the court, either to a district court judge or an authorized magistrate. Normally I see it presented to a district court judge as an ex parte request, and that word ex parte, to remind our listeners, is just one-sided. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have the other side there. You're setting forth your allegations in your complaint, and in the event that those allegations rise to the level of domestic violence under Chapter 50B, then the court will enter an ex parte order. Normally, that ex parte order is something along the lines of Person A, stay away from Person B, that kind of thing. And then there is a return hearing. That's normally within 10 days. Of course, you've got to get a time for it to be heard. Sometimes a lawyer gets in on the other side of it, and we have to work it out for it maybe to be a little bit longer than that, as long as the ex parte order stays in place. But nevertheless, there is then that return hearing, then the full hearing. Kind of like what we talked about last week with Rule 65, in many cases you have a temporary restraining order, which is entered ex parte, and then a return hearing within 5 days for the full, you know, fleshing out, at least preliminarily, of the evidence for the court to consider. So as we look at the statute and we talk about what is domestic violence, is identified, I think people kind of have a feeling about what that might be.
Yeah.
But it is identified in the statute generally. There's actually some references to other particular statutes, but I'm going to stick with the more general language in 50B. States that attempting to cause bodily injury or intentionally causing bodily injury. Okay, so, you know, trying to hit someone, it could be using a weapon towards someone, even if you're not successful, if there was an attempt to do so. Next, placing the aggrieved party, and the aggrieved party is going to be the person who is presenting this to the court and seeking relief. So placing the aggrieved party or a member of the aggrieved party's family or household in fear of imminent serious bodily injury or continued harassment that rises to such a level as to inflict substantial emotional distress. So there's a little bit to unpack there because the placing the aggrieved party or member of the aggrieved party's family or household in fear of imminent serious bodily injury, that doesn't indicate in the statute, doesn't require that the person, the aggrieved party, has to be the one who is in imminent fear of serious bodily injury. It could be a child. It could be that there was abuse toward someone who is part of the family, the grandmother, the grandfather. But it's normally going to be family unit, but not necessarily the person who is making the complaint.
I understand.
A lot of times what you see here is you'll see the aggrieved party, making allegations of being subjected to this abuse. And then as part of that, also there are allegations with regard to abuse relative to the child as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the mother protecting the child, and normally it's the male who is the aggressor. Yeah, unfortunately, but that's typically the way that I see it anyway. But it's not limited to that. You know,
it could be the
female in a male-female relationship.
Sure. It sounds, too, that we're talking, as a civil matter here, the DVPO, but also that it sounds like there's elements of criminal activity as well, that persons could be charged both in criminal court and taken to civil court.
Yep. Sometimes you have competing cases. Sometimes or cases moving at the same time where you have a criminal action proceeding and a DVPO at the same time, or sometimes you have competing DVPOs. You know, sometimes you have a situation where one party brings one.
He said, she said.
Oh, okay. I can't believe you did that. I'm going to bring one too to try to neutralize the first one.
Yeah.
You know, and then, the district court judge then here's all of that. These are non-jury matters. These are matters that are heard pretty quickly by a district court judge, but it's normally a full-fledged, you know, kind of mini trial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of these are dealt with by folks who are not represented by counsel. You know, I have certainly seen a good number of those being in and around the courtroom. They're normally not handled very well when there's not lawyers involved in it, as far as presenting evidence and putting on what you need to. And what I would say briefly about that would be that if one party has an attorney, the other party probably needs to have an attorney. Otherwise, this might not go very well for you,
mm-hmm.
because there's a lot of little landmines in the statute that someone without an attorney may not recognize. So.
And Cecil, once a DVPO is issued by the court, and both parties then are presented the papers on that, if one breaks the rule, if one breaks the agreement of the DVPO, in other words, continues whatever precipitated the initial act, does it remain in civil court or does it move to criminal court?
Well, it there would be a kind of what we call a motion in the cause, and then the judge would have to make a decision. There is such a thing in our law, Mike, as civil contempt, okay, as well as criminal contempt. But if someone violates any order, then they're in contempt of court. And, you know, there's a various of many consequences to that, including, you know, being put in, you know, a jail, county jail for 30 days or mm-hmm. for a week or 10 days or something of that nature. But if someone violates this order, they would be in what we lawyers would call civil contempt.
Civil contempt. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Let's hold our thought there. We'll continue our discussion after this first break here. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins about a very important topic, domestic violence protection orders. And you can learn more about Harvell and Collins two ways. Go online to harvellandcollins.com or call the office today, 252-726-9050. We'll be right back after this quick timeout. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal. Joining us for this conversation on the phone is Cecil Harvell, and in studio is Wes Collins. And we're talking about domestic violence protection orders. And gentlemen, maybe one of you can just tell the listeners or explain to the listeners what types of relationships fit under this Chapter 50B as it relates to DVPOs.
Right. So that's important to know, because if you don't fall within one of the categories of the what's defined in the statute as a personal relationship, then you're not going to get any relief. Or if somehow you got an ex parte order, you're probably not going to be able to get it extended any. So going through the list as it relates to what a personal relationship is, and these are the types of relationships that are protected under the 50B statute, is current or former spouses. Okay, important, obviously. They can be divorced, doesn't matter, current or former spouses. Persons of the opposite sex who live together or have lived together. Are related as parents and children, including others acting in loco parentis, so someone acting as a parent for a minor child, or as grandparents and grandchildren. Okay, so really, that's pretty broad as far as we're going multiple degrees there. We're going, you know, parent, grandparent, then down to the child, grandchild. So it's a pretty broad with regard to that. Individuals who have a child in common, don't have to be married, mm-hmm. but obviously have a child in common. Now we're getting really broad as we move forward. Our current or former household members.
Wow.
Well, you can really get into a little bit of an argument before the district court judge about household members.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what does that really mean? Does that mean
I lived in a group house?
Does that mean just your typical, you know, husband wife unit, or probably not? Because that's identified elsewhere. It means those living under the same roof, in general. So it's pretty broad as it relates to that.
And for how long? You know, what was the duration of,
right,
of the living together,
right,
under the roof?
Yeah. Bill stayed overnight last night.
Right.
Same household.
Exactly. One night or 360 nights.
Right. Yeah. Woke up the next morning. He punched me in the face. Here I am. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, next, are persons of the opposite sex who are in a dating relationship or have been in a dating relationship. For purposes of this subdivision, a dating relationship is one wherein the parties are romantically involved over time and on a continuous basis during the course of the relationship. A casual acquaintance or ordinary fraternization between persons in a business or social context is not a dating relationship. So those are your six different identifiers as it relates to personal relationship. So we have to fall within that category in order to get relief in the event that we feel as though we've been subjected to a domestic violence type situation or a stalking situation or something like that, and we're not in one, don't fall within one of these personal relationship categories, then we fall into a different statute that we'll talk about later, which is the 50C statute. So it's also important to know that there's a limitation on the time. In the event you go to court on your follow-up hearing before the district court judge and the judge enters an order granting some relief, then the judge's hands are tied as to how long that relief can last. 1 year. Okay, so we're limited to a year. So basically we're talking about the TRO at the beginning. That's very short. Then we have the return hearing, and then we have normally the term being 1 year. And like Cecil said, in the event of a breach of the orders of the court, then in many cases there's a return, yet another hearing where the court makes a determination as to what the sanction would be. In many cases, we're dealing with a contempt situation, and potentially, depending on how egregious the actions of the breacher, the breaching party, are, there would be a period of incarceration. I mean, there could be for a temporary period of time because of breach of the court order.
And Cecil, West says, you know, outlined the criteria, and it is very broad, but at what point do you typically see people coming to you for legal representation when they're involved in a case?
Well, in the arena, I would say in the arena of this, the domestic violence area, but really in all injunctive, in all relief, relative to injunctive relief, let's think about it a minute, Mike. You know, it just seems like all of those cases are, quote, time of the essence cases. I mean, literally, you know, people come in, they call on a Thursday or Friday, they want to see you bright and early Monday or Tuesday morning,
right.
You know, and they want something done by Friday afternoon or the following Monday. I mean, they move very, very quickly, and our law firm, you know, Wes and his staff and his associate lawyers and the paralegals have to move these cases to the top of the list because, you know, if you don't, then the damage is going to occur.
Right.
So that's kind of a unique quality to an injunctive relief case. Certainly domestic violence, I mean, people have to have it cease and desist immediately. They're living on pins and needles.
Right.
There's a tremendous amount of stress related to that. But also, you know, if your neighbor is about to, you know, do something that's going to, you know, irreparably harm your property, or if there's going to be some damage to a historic building, you know, these are things that, you know, have to go to the top of the list, Mike, if that's answering your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. That's what makes these cases unique.
Yeah.
You know, unlike some of our litigation files that kind of, you know, not because we're not doing the work, but just because of the nature of the court system and the nature of litigation, they go on for, you know, months and years.
Mm-hmm.
These are the kinds of cases that are handled very, very quickly. With that, Mike, the judges are available for these kinds of cases. They must be.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Wes has met judges, for instance, in their parking lot, in their garage, to have to sign, a temporary restraining order. Judges are accustomed to getting calls from lawyers that telling them the circumstances, and then the judge will say, well, let me swing by your office, or will you meet me at a certain place? That's a fairly typical scenario here.
That's good.
Because that case has to move very, very quickly.
That's right. And they're public servants and elected officials and respond accordingly. Let's hold our thoughts on that note here. We'll take our final break and come back with our closing segment of Let's Talk Legal, a topic that is very important to many out there, DVPOs, domestic violence protection orders. And we're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. If you'd like to have a conversation with them, call 252-726-9050 or go online to harvellandcollins.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. And Wes, a very important topic here. We started to unpack some of the elements. What is some of the allowable relief that we can get from this?
Right. The statute is very clear, and I know we just have a couple minutes, so I'll go quickly, but the statute is clear as it relates to the relief the court may grant. And number one is direct a party to refrain from such act, whatever the act may be. Can grant a party possession of the residence or household of the parties and exclude the other party from the residence or household. You see, that's a big one. That's a big ticket item.
Yeah.
Where one party wants to kick the other out of the house. I mean, that, we can really see how that can become, quite confrontational. Require a party to provide a spouse and his or her children suitable alternative housing. Award temporary custody of minor children and establish temporary visitation rights. I'm kind of paraphrasing a little bit now in the interest of time. Order the eviction of a party from the residence or household and assistance to the victim in returning to it. That's whoever's in possession, you're out.
Yeah.
Other party, you're in. You know, so you can see how that gets pretty serious.
Yep.
Order either party to make payments for the support of a minor child as required by law. Order either party to make payments for the support of a spouse as required by law. Provide for possession of personal property of the parties, including the care, custody, and control of any animal owned, possessed, kept, or held as a pet by either party or minor child residing in the household. You know, the dog, the cat,
the horse,
the beloved animal, that's part of it. The pet, order a party to refrain from doing any or all of the following: threatening, abusing, or following the other party, harassing the other party, including by telephone, visiting the home or workplace or other means, cruelly treating or abusing an animal owned, possessed, kept, or held as a pet by either party or minor child residing in the house, otherwise interfering with the other party. And here's a important part of the statute. As we talked about before, in order to get your attorney's fees, you have to have a statute on point. We've got to wrap this up. There's an award of attorney's fees allowed. And there's a couple other items that we can touch on next week.
Let's
but
do that.
You can see it's pretty broad, pretty broad what the district court judge can do to protect the parties in these unfortunate type situations.
Absolutely. If you're in that situation, give Harvell and Collins a call today, 252-726-9050. Go online to harvellandcollins.com. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll continue the conversation next Tuesday.
Thank you.